Speaker is Dr. Berggren. She is presenting on school nurse sensitive indicators. The devil is in the details. And Dr. Berggren was director of research at the National Association of School Nurses from 2008 to 2011. She is now working on special projects for the National Association of School Nurses. She is currently lead faculty for Johnson & Johnson School of Health Leadership Program and returned to the nursing faculty of the University of Illinois Chicago this fall. Martha has a doctorate in nursing science and is nationally certified school nurse and a fellow in the National Association of School Nurses in American School Health Association. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to just preface this with that my colleague and I, Erin Maughan, Erin is presenting on this topic at the 12:30 session, and I encourage you, if you're interested in this particular topic, to try to make her presentation also. So this is a research study that was we're collecting data at the moment, and it is funded by the National Association of School Nurses research grant. And I would also, Erin Maughan is currently the director of research at the National Association of School Nurses, and Heidi Seigen assisted on this project as a DNP student and is now on the faculty of Rush University. And unfortunately, or fortunately, Heidi delivered a healthy baby boy about 3 weeks ago and was unable to be with us today. And I would like to state that the following relationships with commercial interests did not exist during the last 12 months. I have no relationships or conflict of interest to disclose. So this project came about from a research priority that was established by the Board of Directors of the National Association of School Nurses, who wanted to measure the different outcomes of delivery models of school nursing services. And one of the issues that was confronted was there are no outcome measures that are sensitive to whether or not there is a school nurse in a school or what the credentials of that nurse are. So we wanted to identify a set of outcome indicators that we could recommend to our network of nurse researchers across the country to use in multi-site studies to measure those phenomena that we believe are sensitive to school nurse intervention. So when we talk about sensitive outcome indicators, it's especially difficult with a community-based nurse in that so many different variables interfere or weigh into whether or not a child has positive or negative health outcomes. So we're trying to find those indicators that are so sensitive that you can detect whether or not a school nurse intervention makes a difference in the outcomes. So I just wanted to give you as an example some of the outcome measures that have been used in the acute care setting. Many of you are familiar with the work that's been done by Aiken at the University of Pennsylvania and the NDNQI by the American Nurses Association. And these are just five of the indicators that they've found detect the difference in outcomes depending on the intensity of nurses, registered nurses, on a unit in a hospital. And, you know, just looking at this list, you understand that these are not the essential, this is not the essential work of school, of nurses. But they are proxies for the case management and the higher level judgment that goes into nursing care in an acute care facility. So, for instance, decubitus ulcers, central line infections, failure to rescue, for those of you who are not familiar with that term, that's when a patient starts to decompensate and how quickly the person caring for that patient detects that they're on a downward spiral and whether or not they can interfere in time to prevent either complications or the patient's death. Readmissions to the facility and patient falls. In using these and about 10 other indicators, they've been able to determine in the acute care setting what the ideal nurse-to-patient ratio is. And what they found was that as you go down from a nursing assignment of 1 to 10 patients down to 1 to 9, 1 to 8, 1 to 7, that when you get to 1 to 5 patients, 1 to 4 to 5 patients, you've hit that sweet spot of the ideal patient to nurse to patient ratio. So when you go down from 5 to 4 patients, you do get a difference in significance in the quality of the outcomes, but not as significant as you did in the previous patient workloads. When you go down below 4 patients, there's no difference in the outcome over a large N. So we know now that the ideal nurse-to-patient ratio in a hospital setting is the 1-to-4 ratio, and that's what we want to find for school nursing. What is that sweet spot in the ratio of school nurses to students? How many of you in the room know what the ratio is that's purported by the CDC and by the National Association of School Nurses? Does anybody know the ideal ratio? It is not 1 to 1,000, but that is actually the ratio that is recommended by several states, including Vermont and Minnesota.
1 to 750.
Yes, it's 1 to 750, and that ratio is the ratio of the nurse to the number of well students in the school. So, yes. Mm-hmm.
I just know that because our state is 1 to 1,500.
1 to 1,500, and what state are you in? Yes. Oh, you're in Pennsylvania, 1 to 1,500. And actually, I come from Illinois, where the average ratio is 1 to 2,400. And the ratios range in the U.S. from, I'm going on memory now, I should have looked it up. I believe it's 1 to 450 in Vermont, and 1 to over 5,000 in Michigan. And Michigan and Utah have a running contest as to who comes out the worst. I've worked with some nurses in Utah who have up to 8,000 students that they're responsible for. And, you know, when you get to those ratio levels, you know, when you talk about outcome indicators, you know, there's only a certain level of nursing you can provide at that ratio. And so what we want to do is to be able to conduct multi-site research, and we have the perfect experiment with that range of ratios across the country to find out how many students are too many for a nurse to care for. I did want to mention that the ratio of nurses to students with chronic health conditions, so asthma, allergies, is 1 to 250. The ratio for students with medically fragile conditions is 1 to 125. I have actually worked in settings. I've been a school nurse in 4 states and did carry 1 to 125 medically fragile students, where you're doing the case management for those students, not always the direct care. Usually the direct care is provided by instructional aides or health aides. And then, of course, there are also situations where it's 1 to 1. The last school that I worked in, I had 2 kids on ventilators, both of whom had their own full-time nurse who cared for them throughout the school day and on the transportation to and from school. But those ratios are based on expert opinion and not on any kind of measured research studies. For those of you who are familiar with school health, Dr. Pat Cooper, who ran a study in Macomb, Mississippi, with a very large Pac Bell grant, made, based on that case study, a recommendation that in high poverty schools, the ideal ratio is 1 to 300, and in the average school, the ratio was best at 1 to 400. But again, on very soft data, and we would like to develop that foundation for being able to make a case for what outcomes you can expect when you staff school nursing at a certain intensity level. So we know that there are many influences on the outcomes that we are concerned with in schools. Poverty rate, there are quite a few presentations here at this conference on school connectedness and school climate. School system leadership, big difference between schools that principals and superintendents believe that a healthy child is a child that's ready to learn. Parenting, and the breadth and quality of community health services, and many, many more variables. So how do you go about developing a set of nurse-sensitive indicators? The National Association of School Nurses put together a research task force of nurse experts to weigh in on a core set of variables that we would drill down, and our ideal number is 3 to 5 variables. We will be very happy if we come up with 3 to 5 variables that we can start testing at a multi-state and multi-site level. Currently, we have that list narrowed to 67 variables and are conducting a Delphi study that Aaron will be presenting on at 12:30. So from we also got the input of the National Association of School Nurses Board of Directors, which represents a wide variation in types of school nursing, whether they work for public health departments, school systems, or now more and more common acute care systems. There are systems, for instance, in Austin, Texas, where the school nurses are all employees of the local hospital. So getting their input on what they thought good outcome indicators would be was also taken into consideration. So I'm just going to give you just a small sample of some of those outcome indicators that are going to be evaluated in the study that's being conducted as we speak. 911 calls, and that's been actually researched quite a bit here in the state of Massachusetts. Asthma response, early dismissal is a particular variable that we've actually found is in 3 studies has been shown to be sensitive to the full-time school nurse. In those 3 studies, the if a child has a full-time registered nurse at school, they're 57% less likely to be sent home in the middle of the day. And with the number of mothers and dads that work full-time and being called away from their place of employment, it's an incredibly important variable to employers and to communities to make sure that kids aren't being sent home, missing that time in school, and pulling parents away from work when that isn't necessary. So just to give you an example of one that we know is sensitive. Actually, I don't know how to go back. We also had we've measured failure to rescue in schools, and unfortunately, we do not know how many children die at school every day in the United States. Unlike OSHA, which measures, we know exactly the number of people who die at work every day in the U.S., but we don't know how many children die at school. And a colleague of mine at the University of Pennsylvania and I did a retrospective study looking over newspaper articles from a period of time and found that it was more likely that a child would die if there wasn't a registered nurse present at the school that day. So just some other, and I'm sure that you can look at these and think, well, I bet that one's sensitive, but perhaps another one is not that sensitive, and that's the process that we're going through right now. Injuries, parent satisfaction, actually after the previous presentation about missed medications and wrong dose, we don't have a variable for wrong route, like the nasal spray, and you've just suggested to me that perhaps we should add that to the list. I had not thought of that happening in a school setting, now that you've shown me that it could happen. So again, just some more of the outcomes that we're mentioning. So we're right now in round 1 of our study, and I'm just going to tell you some of the interesting findings that we've had about the process up till this date. There's 4 criteria that we need to measure each of these variables on. Importance, whether or not this is an important outcome to the child and to the community. Scientific acceptability is the National Quality Forum's term for does the definition of the outcome reflect the actual, is it a valid outcome and can it be measured in the, does the measurement of it reflect the actual term that we're using. Usability is a kind of a funny criteria in that does the general public understand what this means and
Is it one that's going to have some salience and some resonance in the population? Feasibility, we have a lot of variables that are important and easily defined, and the public knows what it means, but the data is not available, and we cannot retrieve it. Or to retrieve it would be very, it would consume a lot of resources of time and money. So one area that we did not think was going to be time-consuming in this study was defining the variables. We actually thought that was not going to take very long at all, and we thought with some of the variables that we were very familiar with, we would easily define those. And actually, we found out that it was a very long process. It took us almost a year to define the 67 variables. And I'm just going to talk about that right now. So the easy ones were the ones that are already defined by another body. The National Quality Forum has identified child outcome measures, and we did use that pool to draw from for those variables that are related to school health outcomes. And I was very lucky to be on the Child Health Steering Committee for the National Quality Forum, and they are very interested in variables that do measure the outcomes of school health. The AHRQ also has sets of outcome variables, and in fact they were giving out books with their outcome measures at their booth here at this conference. And the national associations, just like the National Association of School Nurses, have developed some sets of outcome measures. Following that, following the low-hanging fruit, then we went to the literature to do a review of the literature, and then we had to, when we found conflicting definitions, had to synthesize that and make a choice using our advisory committee which definition we felt would be more sensitive to school nurse interventions. So this is one of the variables that's identified by the National Quality Forum, and the number of school days children miss due to illness. So how many of you in the audience think that this is an important variable to measure? Okay, pretty much unanimous. Scientifically acceptable, does the number of school days missed due to illness, is that an accurate measure of attendance? Show of hands. I'm seeing shaked heads, so we won't get into that. That could be a five-minute discussion. Usability, do you think this resonates with the general public? I'm seeing yes and no. Okay. Feasibility, how feasible is it to measure attendance? Yeah.
Yes.
The clincher is due to illness. So how easy is it to measure attendance, so the number of school days missed, due to illness? Okay, I'm seeing head shaking. It is actually incredibly difficult. We found during H1N1, I was working with CDC-DASH during H1N1, and they found that only 9% of schools document why a child is absent for that day. And we were shocked at that number. CDC presented their SHIPS data on Monday, and the number of schools have actually increased that document whether or not the child is absent due to illness, but it is not enough to make a significant difference for our purposes. So that's something that we're going to have to work on. If they're not collecting that data in that manner, it makes it very difficult to go in and do a study comparing differences across geographic areas. So the percentage of students excluded from school based on the immunization requirements. How many of you are aware that children who don't meet the immunization requirement in many states are excluded from school until they get those immunizations? Okay, and this is important. I think everyone would agree this is important. Scientific acceptability, I'll tell you right now that the problem there is that every state excludes, in fact, some even within districts exclude on a different date. Some have what's called first day exclusion, and others exclude on any date up and including October 15th. So again, knowing the number of the percentage of students who are excluded, you're really comparing apples and crab apples. I won't say apples and oranges, but apples and crab apples. So within each one of the measures, there are difficulties that you can't anticipate. Late to rescue is another one that we would very much like to measure. We think it would be incredibly nurse-sensitive, but very, very difficult to get this data. One of the problems is that when you're comparing RNs to non-RNs, non-RNs don't document the same way that a registered nurse would. A layperson is not going to document the data the way that that a registered nurse would measure it. So, we know now at this process of our work that being important affects all other criteria. We're currently studying a ranking of 1 to 9 on these criteria. If the measure does not turn out to be important by the majority of those evaluating it, we will veto it. Doesn't matter if it's easy to measure. If it's not important, we're not going to waste research time doing that. Do your homework. I was a little chagrined to find out how difficult that definition stage was. We're behind on our timeline, and it's because of the definitions. So allow sufficient time to do that. And I'll tell you, for those of you who are working on this in other subspecialties of public health, finding nothing takes a lot longer than finding something. So you continually look in the literature trying to find measures for some of these variables, and it takes just tremendously longer if there's nothing in the literature. Get assistance, having Heidi participate with us on our project as an eager and highly intelligent and dogged DNP student was a huge advantage for our project. And be open to the changes and challenges, and just take one step at a time. Thank you.
Oh, well, that was a very nice variety of presentations. Excellent job. We have plenty of time for questions, so please.
Do you have health promotion as a standalone course, or is it incorporated into your community health support account?
No, we do not have health promotion as a standalone course. It's the onus is supposedly entirely on community health, but it could easily be incorporated as a thread throughout, you know, OB, PEDS. But, you know, the faculty is pretty much focused on treatment of disease, despite my best efforts, yes.
And then I have one more question. Were you doing team-based learning before you did your curriculum change, or was that the result of your curriculum change?
No, we've been doing team-based learning since I got there in 2006, so the method was the same. It's just that the application exercise changed for the second level to try to achieve some of these competencies. Yes.
I was just curious if I was struck that perhaps it's not a good thing that the students be confident. And I'm wondering if their confidence is actually a reflection of their actual ability and competence. For instance, I would be glad that the level 2 students are not that confident, and I'm a little nervous that the level 4 students are confident.
Well, that's interesting. I think the idea was once they graduated, if they went to an interview with a health district and they said, how confident are you that you could conduct a community assessment, that they could have, you know, but the way our curriculum is now, sometimes they graduate without having performed some procedures on real people just in our sim lab. And they're considered competent to perform that on a real person. So we actually have them, you know, assess a community as a, you know, in small teams. But that was the measure we had done, you know, with whether they were confident. But, you know, level fours were confident, but, you know, they're young and they know everything by the time they graduate.
I have one more question. I was just wondering what the perception of the faculty were and whether or not they had a higher satisfaction rate in teaching it at level two. I've done both at different universities, and I just found that the level two students were just so much more eager and open to learning, and I was just wondering if you found the same.
Well, there was a bit of shuffling around with faculty. I had to request that certain faculty members never teach this course again because they didn't value community health. And so we have a good team now, and they do comment on how eager the students are compared to the sort of jaded ones on the fourth level where, as I said, it created cognitive dissonance. So we did get them when they're young. And so, and we also have a Lillian Wald contest to, you know, they can win $200 if they do an upstream intervention. So we've created some excitement around the curriculum. So, yes. Well, because our focus is on health promotion, we're able, now that we've worked with the health district for several years, last semester they finally agreed to take a group of 10 students. They do have three locations, or four actually, and we have a dedicated instructor, and we've been doing some of the projects for them that they could never get to, and so they're happy to have that. It's almost like a consulting service, unlike trying to mentor an individual student. So they had one clinic that was terribly underused, and the students assessed the community to find out why that was. So that was a helpful bit of information. So it's actually turned out better for the health district, in my opinion.